You're listening to a celebration of the best moments in Dory Monson's show history. For more information on the life and career of our friend Dory, please visit MyNorthWest.com.
Wait, who's supposed to take it out of the break? You or me?
It's your show, Daddy-O.
It was like listening to The View coming in here. You crying, Ursula, Nicole, all you ladies.
Oh, people were texting in like, oh, you know, this is too much of a feel-good show here. Where's the vitriol, rage,
thanks for holding down the fort. What was the language thing you were teasing?
He just wanted an excuse to play his all-time favorite audio.
Oh, it's my all-time favorite audio, too. Do you have it?
I have it. Would you like me to play it?
Yeah, should we set
it up? This is one of our favorite moments ever.
I have another example of working with somebody who mangled the language, but they were in broadcasting. They should have known the language, but they
weren't
didn't.
Football players.
No. But do you want to set up what this was?
Yeah, well, we were at the NFC divisional playoff game against Green Bay, and they had just an awesome linebacker named Julian Peterson, and they started out that game. They were ahead by like what? Was it 21-0 or 14-0?
Yeah, it just looked like blood. 14, I think.
Yeah. And then the Packers came back, and then Julian was interviewed afterwards, and he described what the game felt like.
And Dave Wyman, you were out of control as we were listening to that interview. Look at you. What's wrong with you?
Spit it out.
you enjoyed the first?
Oh, that was the funniest thing I've heard all year.
can we replay just the very beginning of that interview?
None of the rest
right
of us
now.
Noticed it. You were the only one who noticed it.
Okay, here we go. The very beginning. Just for you, Dave.
This is a very emotional game. This can get you every week in, week out. You're going through ups and downs emotionally. It causes a lot of stress. You can get gold bladders from this. And, it's a lot, man. And
that just struck you very funny.
I thought everybody had a gallbladder. I didn't know you could get one from a stressful situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes people have theirs removed. And so then, you know, if you ever do have one removed, just come to a game like this and you might get one.
Oh, God bless you, Julian.
I did not know you that well at that point. You know, we weren't close friends at that point. And that's the moment where I thought, well, this guy could be kind of fun to hang out with.
You know, it brought me back to in the NFL. There's so many times, and I say this all the time on our show, and I was telling Nicole some of the examples. Like Brock has the one story where the guy came running up to the front to get the trainer. He said, yeah, there's a player back there. He's laying like cramped over in the fecal position. You know, and then there's a guy that pulled his oblique, and he's like, yeah, it's hurting right down here in my lobleeps. You know, so all those words, and then we had another guy named Keith Millard that used to, and Keith was like the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. He's the guy I got in a fight with on the tarmac. Yeah. So that's another story. But, you know, he would always, whenever somebody would say, well, you know, a player of my caliber, and he'd go, calculator? What? What did you say? You know, and then like when people try to say camaraderie, he'd go common karate. So we started calling like our, you know, camaraderie nights when we go out, we call it common karate night. You know, so just there was always somebody, you know, I had a coach that said pathetical and ferocious one time in front of the whole group. Yeah. And I would just burst out laughing.
They have an excuse. They're football players.
Yeah. Exactly.
I worked with a broadcaster, a supposed professional who used the English language. He was a weekend sports anchor at King 5. And he covered a Ohio State University of Washington game at Husky Stadium. Yeah. And the Washington defense played really well. And he did a stand-up at halftime. The Ohio State quarterback was not going to start the second half. And he goes, yeah, he had such a rough first half, he was relegated to the bench in the second half. Instead of relegated.
Relegated, yeah.
But he left the voice track, and then he just took off to go to dinner, and we got to put it on the air. And so we're all saying, well, do we make him look like a fool? And I go, yeah, let's make him look like a fool. Mm-hmm. Because I was a horrible producer. Because I thought I should be on the air and not these guys.
I see.
And so, yeah, we put it on the air that the Ohio State quarterback was regulated to the bench in the second half of the game. And that was a broadcast professional.
Yeah. Well, you can understand when a linebacker says, and what was he trying to say?
Relegated.
No, I mean Julian Peterson instead of gallbladders.
I don't know.
Bladder stones?
I have no idea.
Kidney stones?
I will never figure that out. None of those come from stressful situations.
And a game that can give you gallbladders.
Yeah. I have no idea.
It took me back.
You want to hear what happened to me last night?
Yeah, you sent the weirdest email.
Okay. So the program director and I, they gave us an option. Do you want to drive over Monday morning to Ellensburg? Or if you want to come over Sunday night, we'll get you a motel room.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, I'll be nice and rested then. So I'll go over Sunday night. So I go over, I get there about 8:30 last night. Our program director, who's only been here for a few months, I said, do you want to go get some dinner? Because mm-hmm. I'm gracious that way. So he and I went and got dinner. And I get back to the hotel about 10 o'clock. Now I have to do show prep for today's show. Mm-hmm. So I sit down and put the laptop on the desk in the hotel room. And I don't want to name the hotel because I don't think it's fair to them. I'm not going to name them. By the way, that Jazz Great.
I think he's going to name them.
Yeah, I knew it.
No, I'm really not. The Jazz Great, Lionel, what was his name? Lionel.
Richie?
No, the Jazz Great.
I don't know.
Don't know. I'll look it up, but you keep going. Yes.
Can you find something? Oh, yeah, I found it.
I'm surprised that Dettori.
It's Hampton. I got it. Know. It's Hampton.
Okay.
Jazz Great. And then one other question just popped in my mind. There's a fast food place called blank out burger.
Uh-huh.
What's the first one?
In and out?
In. Oh. In. That's it. Okay, anyway. Yeah. I don't know why I was thinking of Hampton and In. Anyway, so I'm at this motel that I'm not going to name. And I do the show prep till about 1:30, sitting at the desk. And now I got to get up at 6:30 to do today morning show prep. Mm-hmm. That was my late night show prep. So I go to the bed. I'm all ready to go nighty night. I pull down the bedspread, and what do my eyes see? But a pretty good sized drop of blood right in the middle of the top sheet.
Like how big? Silver dollar?
Between a...
It looked like a drop.
About a nickel.
Oh, you sent a picture?
Oh, yeah, I got pictures. Oh, believe me, I have pictures. So now I have a decision to make. I can either just fold the sheet so that it's way, way far away and try to sleep because it's approaching 2 a.m. It's literally, it's 1:55.
Did you try calling the front desk?
Well, or I can call the front desk. So I thought, well, is there any way I can sleep? And I'm thinking there's no way. There's no way I can sleep on a blood-soaked bed. So I call the front desk. And I tell the woman, there's blood on my bed. And she goes, oh, and she has kind of an English accent. And she's kind of a slow mover. 25 minutes later, I hear a little knock on the door. And she apologizes and she said, oh, I'm so sorry. I had to help another customer. And I'm thinking, I have blood on my bed. What could another customer's needs possibly be that would be a higher priority than the guy with the bloody bed?
At 2 in the morning.
Yes! So she peels back the bedspread. I can't even believe the story.
Oh, my God.
She peels back the bedspread. She changes the sheets. Then she starts to pull the bedspread back over. I'm still sitting at my desk doing stuff on my laptop. And all of a sudden, I hear her go, oh, there's blood on the bedspread, too.
Ew.
Well, of course there is. They don't wash those.
And she goes, that's disgusting. She says that to me, the customer. And I go, yeah. And I go, did you bring a bedspread? No. And remember, the sheets took 25 minutes because she is kind of a slow mover. And so now I go, well, I need another bedspread, and we got to change out the pillowcases.
Do they have a hide-a-bed?
No.
Why not just switch rooms? I'm confused.
I don't know. Well, I've got my shaving kit in one place. I've got my papers on the table.
You
I should have switched
her.
For all I know, there could have been a murder in this room.
That would have taken you 5 minutes to pack up
those things. I know. I should have. I wasn't thinking right.
I guess not.
Before, because I have this really precise schedule, Dave, right 15 minutes before I was going to crawl into bed, Daddy pops an Ambien.
So, by the way, that led to my second favorite soundbite of post-game radio.
My favorite.
Seahawks. Yeah.
So maybe I'm not thinking, I'm going a little Roseanne Barr in the head now because of the Ambien. And I didn't think to switch rooms. So now she has to go get a bedspread. And then about 20, I'm sending emails to you guys at 155, 226, 237. I'm sending pictures of the bloody sheet. I'm sending pictures of all the bed clothing piled on the floor in the room. And then she finally comes back. And then I hear her shaking the bedspread to try to spread it out on this king bed. And I hear, you know, that flopping sound when you shake a sheet? Flop, flop. And it's still a mess. She's got like half of the bed covered. And she's a front desk person. She's not a housekeeping. She doesn't know how to make the bed. And I go, look, I really have to get to bed. And I get up and I just grab the other two corners. I go, let's just set it on top and let's see what we can do with this here.
Because she's a slow mover.
Man, oh man.
Can I ask, then what happened?
Well,
did you sleep?
I became convinced, and I went hiking on Saturday, and I got really sweaty, and I went sea-doing yesterday, so I'm thinking that's why I had some rash on the back of my thighs, but I'm thinking that some blood-borne disease is the reason why the back of my thighs are burning as I'm laying in this motel at 3:30 in the morning. My alarm's about to go off in 3 hours. I'm not even close to falling asleep. I still got show prep to do.
And a drive.
And I got to drive back to Seattle on no sleep.
That even in the most perfect of conditions, you never would have been able to make in time.
I'm telling you guys, it was awful.
I don't want to see the picture, but describe, like, could it have been paint?
No.
Could it have been ink?
No. He sent us a picture of it. His remote control sitting next to it, and it's about as big as one of the buttons.
Put the remote control next to it for perspective.
Okay, I think it's just housekeeping did not
take
care of it. Maybe there was a woman who
How would you describe that, Dave?
The thing is,
that's blood.
What makes me the most nervous is that it doesn't look like
that's
a
blood,
sheet
right.
That's been washed, and it's just stained. It looks fresh.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So maybe the housekeeper had a bloody nose or something. Or
I don't know.
That's probably it. Yeah. Finger.
Sure. But then I'm thinking, what are the odds that it hasn't sunk through to the mattress and at some point it's going to start seeping back up in the middle of the night through this clean bottom sheet?
It's a hotel. Everything's on that mattress.
You don't want to know that.
Then the question becomes, why do we ever go to motels?
I don't know.
What is wrong with us?
There's lots of things. I just don't think about it. You just can't think about it.
I actually like hotels.
I do, too.
Am I the only one?
No, I love going to hotels.
Have you ever seen, like, the Dateline NBC when they walk through with the ultraviolet light and they put it on the remote?
Just take a shower afterward. But here, I'm wondering.
The remote has, like, a Horton Hears a Who village on it.
Now, did you get offered a free stay at a future?
Well, and then the front desk gal.
She give you a cookie?
She assures me that management will hear about that because she has to write up the overnight report. And she says, well, the manager will contact you in the morning. She'll be here at 8. Will you still be here? And I said, well, I have to leave for the university at 8:15. And I was going to see if the manager contacted me, and the manager didn't. And so I thought, well, I'll just have a little story to tell on the radio now. But what's fair compensation for that?
Another stay, another night, a free night.
I'd say 20 minutes of radio.
Well, if you had paid
That's your payoff, pal.
I believe you were kind of compensated this room. Otherwise, I would say the room should be on.
Well, somebody else paid for the room.
That's what I mean. But under normal circumstances,
but I had to suffer the consequences of the blood.
Oh.
Yeah, usually they put a mint on the pillow. Dory gets a drop of blood.
Wow.
Okay, I'm sorry to yap on, but I was traumatized and...
You too.
Nice. Yeah, but it's the song.
Nice.
Thematic.
What?
It's thematic.
What is it? What's the song?
What day did I check into this hotel?
Bloody Sunday.
Yeah.
Sean DeTore.
Once again.
Genius.
And that is a rambling, pointless, fastest 15.
Thank you for joining us as we celebrate some of our favorite moments from the Dory Monson Show.
Please enjoy the celebration of the life and career of Dory Monson. You're listening to the best of the Dory Monson Show.
We don't like replaying stuff we did earlier in the show. It's pretty rare when we do that. But I had the rarest of opportunities. One of the only radio interviews that Paul Allen ever did was on our show. And I want to replay it for you. We played it at noon today, and I want to replay it for you coming up in just a few minutes here. So if you did not have a chance to hear it the first time around, the time I got to sit down with Paul Allen, I wonder if he listened to our pre- and post-game shows when he would go to the games. I hope he did. I hope he enjoyed
that. It's a cool thing to think about.
Yeah, yeah. But I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show that so many – and we talked to him in this interview. People are going to hear it. The Seahawks were gone to Los Angeles. The moving there. And I tell you, that Ken Behring, I've told you my story with him, right?
I believe so, but it's probably worth repeating.
I was covering the Seahawks for Q13. And Ken Behring was trying to get a new stadium. He either wanted, what he really wanted was a major remodel of the Kingdom, which I think would have been a disaster. And so
Kingdom was a pit.
So and his son David was the team president. And so I arranged to do a one-on-one with David Behring, and they escorted me into a conference room at the Seahawks headquarters in Kirkland. And I've got my Q13 photographer with me. Mm-hmm. And sitting right next to the conference table where we're doing the interview are kind of the schematics and the drawings for the stadium that they wanted to get built. And they're sitting right there. So we, took some shots of that before the interview, and I included that in the story. And Ken Behring banned me from the Seahawks facility.
Really?
Yeah. He said that I was not allowed to set foot, or maybe it was David Behring. I think it was David, team president. I was not allowed to set foot in the Seahawks facility. Because I had violated some trust. It was sitting right next to the conference table.
And you were spilling the beans like, oh.
No, they'd been talking. I mean, I talked to him about the stadium they wanted to build. And so I had some, cover video as he's talking. And I'm showing some of these pictures. And my dear friend, Gary Wright, who the press box at CenturyLink Field is the Gary Wright press box. And Gary Wright's one of those guys who, when I was an 18-year-old intern for an Everett radio station, when I had a Cairo talk show and was doing Seahawks pre and post, treated me the exact same.
Right.
Whatever station I was at in life.
Which basically with respect.
Yes. And he saved me from the bearings.
Moved. Is, people actually trying to block the moving van. I mean, where you can see.
Yeah, there were like five guys standing in front of this huge cab.
Yes.
Yeah, like they're going to be able to stop it. Yeah, it was crazy. So, and Gary Wright, the Seahawks vice president who had several interactions with Paul Allen, he's going to join us in just a couple minutes here as well. But let me start with this Big Lead exclusive.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And that is when the Seahawks made the Super Bowl back at the end of the 2005 season, February 2006 in Detroit. And I'm pretty sure it was Gary Wright who made this happen. Paul Allen, who never did interviews, he came and sat down with me on our show a couple of days before the Super Bowl. And it was one of the rarest of thrills on my show or in my career. And I talked to him about saving the team in Seattle. Here was my Super Bowl interview with Paul Allen.
Talk about this week. I mean, this has to be something else for you to be part of the Super Bowl week with your team.
It's just amazing. The people out here in Detroit have been so welcoming. Today I was fortunate to go out to practice and watch the team prepare, and it was the last full practice. We have, a run through tomorrow and a team photo tomorrow. But just how focused the guys are out there, just that quiet confidence that they have, which is great talking to some of the coaching staff, and it's going to be exciting on Sunday. And I know everyone in the Northwest will probably be watching.
One of the things you were talking about with me was growing up, going to Husky Stadium, wanting to feel that kind of sentiment surrounding a team. At noon today, we carried live the rally in Westlake Center, and the city is feeling that passion now.
You know, that's been one of the incredibly heartwarming things about this year for me, is just to see all the Seahawks fans that have been patiently waiting for years for a season like this, and to have it really happen, and to be here in the Super Bowl. I think, you know, I'm still pinching myself this week. I'm sure a lot of the fans are out there too, but just to see all that community support, see all the blue everywhere, the 12s that have appeared all over the city, the rallies that have taken place, it's just wonderful.
Everyone thought of you as a basketball guy. Has football replaced basketball as a passion? Has it equaled basketball as a passion for you?
You know, obviously, I think the first point I would make is that, you know, I went to football games as a kid, I think before I ever went to a basketball game, and I became a big NBA fan when the Sonics won the championship back in the late 70s, when we first moved Microsoft up to Seattle from Albuquerque. But obviously in basketball you have a lot more games, and in football these playoff games are so intense because it's one game up or down. You either keep going in the playoffs, or in this case this last game advanced to the Super Bowl. So the games are incredibly intense, and there's nothing like the Super Bowl in sports in the U.S. It's the pinnacle of press coverage, fan enthusiasm, and all that. So it's just amazing to be here with the team.
We're talking with Seahawks owner Paul Allen, who's joining us live here in Detroit. What I've said about the Super Bowl, Paul, and I'm sure you're feeling some of this now, it is like a laser beam of energy that's focused. There is all of this buildup and anticipation, and once that ball is kicked on Sunday, it is going to unleash this torrent of pent-up anticipation and energy. And as you just said, there really isn't too much like this in the American landscape.
Yeah, and some of the, you know, the coaches were even mentioning today that, you know, the practices this week, you know, as the week has worn on, have been a little extra intense. I think, you know, the players certainly feel that. I think if you're involved with team management, everybody feels that energy and the attention that the whole country brings to this game. And this is a country-wide event, and people around the world follow the game too. So it's something everybody should just savor and enjoy. And boy, I'm looking forward to that kickoff. I wish kickoff was right around the corner. Actually,
we're doing the countdown. It's about 49 hours plus now, and we're eager for that countdown. Are you enjoying this? I mean, it was obvious the emotion that you exhibited when you raised the 12th man flag at that NFC Championship game. Do you enjoy the other things that surround it, like sitting down with me right now? Because everyone thought of you as somebody who didn't like doing interviews. Why have you chosen to embrace this aspect?
Well, I think, you know, this is such a special year, and I think people do want to hear from the team owner what it's like to be involved with the franchise and helping the franchise succeed, and what a special year this has been. And it was just great to be up there raising the 12th man flag and hear, you know, the thank yous and the fan support for all you've, you know, you put a lot of hard work into getting your franchise to the point we are this year, and it's just really rewarding to hear the positive fan support for what you've been trying to accomplish, and for the franchise, and just to hear the roar of the crowd in Quest Field, you know, at kickoff, and then just the celebration when the game was over, how amazing that was, and I'm just very hopeful on Sunday, and then Monday when we come back to Seattle, we'll have something even greater.
I think 2 days ago was the 10-year anniversary of when the moving vans packed up for for Anaheim. Were you brought into this reluctantly into the ownership? And talk a little bit, since that marked that anniversary, that 10-year anniversary, just talk a little bit about the genesis of you with this team.
That was a situation where obviously, I wasn't the owner of the team at that point, and the team, the previous owner, Mr. Baring, was in the process of moving, trying to move the team to, I think it was Anaheim, and some civic leaders came to me and said, the league has basically told us they don't want the move to happen. We don't want it to happen. Would you consider being the owner? And anytime you think about owning a professional sports franchise, it's a real commitment of time, energy, and enthusiasm. And I already owned one, and I thought, I also at that point I had enjoyed some Seahawks football, and I thought, God, it'd be great to be able to help the franchise succeed in Seattle. I got excited about it, but then I knew we needed a new facility to really make the economics work, and we were able to have a public referendum on that, and got approval for that by a very thin margin. If anybody remembers, I think it was 0.5% or less, and we had a big celebration when that happened. So it's been in one way it seems a long time ago, 10 years ago, but another way it doesn't seem that long ago that we just had the vote to approve the Quest Field.
Yeah, and Quest Field has played such a huge role in this team's success. Now we're on the road. We're in a stadium where there are going to be more Steeler fans than Seahawk fans. What's that going to be like for you now?
Well, that's the rumor. There's going to be more Steelers fans. Although I hear a lot of the independent fans saying that that actually they're going to root for the when the game starts they're going to root for the Seahawks. I don't think anybody should underestimate the loudness of the Seahawks fans that are going to be there. So it's going to be really interesting to see that unfold.
Paul, it's a pleasure. I'm glad to finally meet you in person. I've enjoyed the couple opportunities we've had to have you on the show.
All right, Dory.
Okay, thank you so much. The owner of the Seattle Seahawks, Paul Allen, joining us.
What an honor for me. I cannot tell you. You told me when I was a kid growing up in Ballard that I'd do interviews like that someday. That was crazy. And it was, especially now with his passing, it was just very special.
Celebrating the life and career of Dory Monson. You're listening to the very best of the Dory Monson Show. It's gonna tell you when. It's too late. Who's gonna tell you things?
You're listening to a celebration of the best moments in Dory Monson show history. For more information on the life and career of our dear friend Dory, please visit mynorthwest.com.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no.
As I said, my heroes were always people who just persevere in life and provide, but they also experience those highs and those lows, and they take great risks, and they experience great accomplishments. Those are my heroes. A couple of years ago, when we were right in the depths of the stay-at-home shutdown, I think all of us were flatlining a little bit. We weren't getting out much. We weren't with the people who made us laugh and made us experience joy. And we weren't, I mean, there was a lot of sorrow a couple of years ago because we lost way too many people to this pandemic. But I think for the most part, people were just kind of living life on an even keel. And we all hated it. We hated it. Because we collectively started to realize this is no way to live. Where every day is the same. Every day was the same a couple of years ago. And somehow in talking about that a couple of years ago, I somehow started talking about our greatest generation, whom we are losing so many of on a daily basis. But I'm talking about the men, and they were primarily young men who had a mission 80 years ago to save the world. In a very literal sense, it was their mission to go save the world from Hitler and from tyranny. And as I was talking about on the air, I got a message from a woman who listens to the show. And she said, oh, you should talk to my dad. He has stories and he's a really good storyteller. And she told me that her dad was a World War II combat vet. And that's when we began every, you know, 6 weeks or so for the last couple of years, visiting with my hero. I didn't know he was my hero the first time we visited at first. I figured it out just about 60 seconds into the conversation. When I heard this man who was still so funny, so full of life, such a great storyteller, and was able to take you and me into the battlefield with him. And he explained, it's been almost 80 years, Phil. Why do you still get so emotional 80 years later?
I don't know. I feel that... I shouldn't be here. I was too lucky. 195 days of combat, somebody shooting a rifle or a pistol or artillery shells at me, personally at me. And I figured if I could live through the first day of engagement of the enemy, I'm going to make it through. No question about it. But that's the kind of guy I am. I can get weepy at thinking about my youth, for example. Just I'm a soft-hearted guy.
My hero, Phil. I'm sorry. Nah, I'm not going to apologize. I was thinking maybe I should pre-tape my opening segment because I know this is going to be tough. But you're just going to have to put up with me. So Phil graduated from Seattle's Garfield High School in 1943. He was a Seattle All-City track champion. He was one of the fastest kids in Seattle. He was growing up on the streets in what's now the Central District. I guess it was then, too, right around Garfield. And right after graduating from Garfield, Phil gets a letter. He's been drafted. And he had to go off to basic training. And then within just a few weeks or months, he was off to Europe to save the world along with many other American and allied men. They're going to go save the world from Adolf Hitler. I mean, think about that. Think about this kid, an athlete, fastest kid in Seattle, and living a pretty good life, but they were vaguely aware, growing up at Garfield High School, of the horrors of war. By 1943, when they graduated, they were aware of the horrors of war. But they weren't afraid of the horrors of war. In fact, they were ready because there was a selflessness. They were ready, if called, to go and fight. Fight for this country, fight for freedom, fight for survival of mankind. And we got word right before going on the air that Phil passed away last night. And I'm not really crying with sorrow. I am so honored. I am so filled with joy that I got to know this great man, to be my age, and to finally figure out and meet your hero. What a blessing. You know, I never take this gig for granted, but what an absolute blessing that has been for me. I don't believe that too much is a coincidence in life. I think that things happen for a reason. And him being able to share his stories was just one of the greatest blessings of my life and one of the greatest joys of all the years that I've been doing this.
Thank you for joining us as we celebrate some of our favorite moments from the Dory Monson Show.
Even though you look so sure as I was watching you walking out my door, that you always walk back in like you did today.